This is Laura Dierdo with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Mark Gorelick, President and Chief Executive Officer of Children's Minnesota. Dr. Gorelick, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Appreciate being invited.
Now, I'm really looking forward to talking with you more about what you're doing at Children's Minnesota. I know you've got some really fascinating things happening there, and so this will be an amazing discussion. But before we dive into that, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Yeah, sure. Delighted to. My entire career has been in children's healthcare. I began as a pediatric emergency medicine physician, and I practiced that for about 25 years before I moved into full-time healthcare leadership, and I've done that at several different hospitals around the country. I've been here at Children's Minnesota. This month will be 7 years, so I'm very excited about that. For your listeners who may not be familiar with our organization, Children's Minnesota is an independent pediatric health system. We are based here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul. We have two hospitals, one in Minneapolis, one in St. Paul, and an ambulatory surgery center and over a dozen clinic locations. And between our two hospitals, we have about 460 beds, which makes us one of the 10 largest children's health systems in the United States. And we serve kids from throughout Minnesota and the surrounding states. We're actually the largest pediatric specialty provider in the upper Midwest. And importantly, I should note, we are celebrating our 100th anniversary this year. So we started in a little house in St. Paul in 1924. Now we've grown into this, comprehensive pediatric health system, which we're very proud of, and very proud to have served this community for the last century, and really excited to think about how we continue to serve this community for at least the next century.
Well, that's an amazing milestone, and certainly excited to, as you mentioned, have such a long and rich history in the community. And, given that reputation that you have, what are some of the trends that you're following most closely right now? What are you really spending most of your time on?
Yeah, and when I think about trends, and it's timely, right? We're celebrating 100th anniversary. We're going through a strategic planning process, so certainly looking at trends is critical. So it's a really important question, and I think there are a few trends that we have our eyes on that are particularly relevant to what we are doing. One is a trend around what's happening with diversity, equity, and inclusion. So back in 2016, in our community health needs assessment, systemic racism and health disparities were identified as two of the five top health issues facing kids in our community by the members of our community as part of that assessment. And that was a real wake-up for us. And really, so since then, since I've been here early 2017, we have made diversity, equity, and inclusion a priority for Children's Minnesota. I think in the last few years, certainly in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer, which happened literally 12 blocks from where I am right now in our Minneapolis hospital, we saw a real increase in activity and commitment around diversity, equity, and inclusion, not only across our industry, but across, other industries in our entire community. And it was really great because we found a lot of willing partners that wanted to work with us to address those issues that our community's been facing. And in the last year or so, we've really started to see, I would think, a certain amount of pullback and retrenchment from that. We see organizations talking less often about diversity, equity, and inclusion. We see the magnitude of the commitments that were made being pared back a little bit. We see other states where school districts and cities and states even are passing laws that limit the ability of organizations like ours to address this very real issue of health disparities. And, the data are pretty clear. I mean, there are enormous health disparities, particularly among kids. Minnesota happens to be among the worst, but it is a national problem. And so this trend of sort of backing off from our efforts to address this, I think, is something that I view with some concern. I will tell you that at Children's Minnesota, we remain as committed as ever to advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion, and serving the very diverse population that we have here in the Twin Cities and in the state. So that's one trend. Another trend I think is similarly concerning is the trend that we're seeing nationally around gender-affirming care, particularly for children. I think although in my 35-year career in children's health, This is a relatively new issue that we are dealing with, but it's not a new thing, not a fad. It's not something that all of a sudden started in, you know, the 2000s. But our ability to talk about it and address it, I think, is really accelerated. And what I view with some concern is that this has gone from being a children's health issue to being a partisan political issue that creates a lot of divisiveness. And again, seeing what's happening in some places with limitations of access to gender-affirming care that we know for kids who are either transgender, gender diverse, non-binary, that they have significant health issues that they need to address, including physical and mental health issues, and having lack of access to those resources is harmful. So we have a gender health program here at Children's Minnesota that we've had for a number of years. We are now starting to get, we serve kids from throughout the state, but we are starting to get a lot of referrals from outside the state in response to efforts to limit access to that care. And, you know, we can barely meet the needs of kids in our own community. And so seeing this trend nationally is concerning. I will tell you that, you know, the care that we provide is it's evidence-based. It is consistent with and supported by, you know, all the major professional organizations, such as the American Academy of Pediatrics. And what's interesting is within our own community, we certainly had community members, donors, raise questions and concerns about it based on what they see in the media. When we sit down and talk with them and explain about gender-affirming care, I find that they have a lot of misperceptions about what we do and don't do, what it does and doesn't involve. And what I hope to see the trend reverse to is to get away from the partisanship and to get down to that ability to have conversations grounded in facts, grounded in evidence, grounded in reality. Because when we do that, we find that we actually have a lot more common ground than I think we're seeing on the front pages of the papers and in social media. And then the third trend I would say that is probably one that a lot of your interviewees probably address, and that's, you know, how are we thinking about the use of artificial intelligence in healthcare? And, you know, to me, I think there's certainly a lot of concerns that have been raised, but there's so much promise. And I think when we think about the use of artificial intelligence, whether for clinical or non-clinical tasks, I think about it in terms of how can it help us advance quality of care? And thinking about quality holistically in terms of the six domains of quality identified by the Institute of Medicine, the obvious ones are AI has the potential to really dramatically increase efficiency and timeliness. And there's certainly some evidence that it's more effective, right? You've studies that have shown AI tools that deliver greater diagnostic accuracy than a human clinician can. I think what we need to make sure is that we're also focusing on those other domains of quality, that we're focusing on safety, that we're focusing on patient-centeredness, and we're focusing on equity. But in my own opinion is if we do this right, I think we have the ability to really advance quality in all of those domains with the use of AI tools, again, done properly. And while I certainly understand and appreciate and agree with the concerns about equity and bias, human intelligence has been demonstrated to be a significantly biased tool. And if it's done right, I think we actually can use this as a way to address some of the biases that have been built into our healthcare system over decades. So those are my three trends.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's so important as you laid out all of those trends there, looking at some of the DEI work. And as you mentioned, keeping that front and center, even though in some ways, some organizations and states have been backing away from it. And then too, looking at the gender affirming care, which has become extremely controversial in some places. I can imagine, as you mentioned, having some of those conversations and being able to bring, you know, understanding to what you're doing and how important that is to children's healthcare is extremely helpful for the community at large. And then AI as well, like you mentioned, being something that so many healthcare organizations are trying to understand and troubleshoot and figure out. as the technology evolves quickly and making sure they're using it appropriately in a way that really can best serve their patients and teammates, you know, big issues here. When you look at all of these things together, I think it really stems into being able to care for your teams and community in a really, really important way. I'm wondering, you know, for the, as you were mentioning, DEI and then the gender affirming care as well, how do you really make sure that, you know, your teams feel supported through, you know, some of these challenging times as some of these issues and areas are, you know, kind of have become politicized, as you mentioned, and really, you know, they can understand that what your philosophy around it is at Children's Minnesota and how they can be supported in moving forward with that philosophy.
Yeah, I think it comes down to being rooted in our vision and mission and values. You know, our vision is to be every family's essential partner in raising healthier children. And when I talk about that, starting from new employee orientation, I say when we say every family, we mean every family. Every family, no matter who they are, no matter what they look like, no matter where they're from, no matter what language they speak, no matter how, whether they can pay for their health care, we mean every family. And so when we root it in that, then that drives me, why do we care about diversity, equity, and inclusion? Why are we caring about making sure that we're providing gender-affirming care and all the other things we do? It's rooted in our why and in our values of you know, being respectful and inclusive. And so that goes a long way towards helping people understand. And then, you know, demonstrating that it is actually truly important to the organization and not just something that we say. And when we look at our strategic scorecard of how are we measuring progress against our strategy, we have six metrics. Two of those six metrics are related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. One is around the diversity of our workforce, and one is around decreasing disparities for patients within our system. And so, and you know, that is something that we report on to our staff at our town hall meetings. How are we doing on our strategic metrics? For our leaders, part of their compensation is tied to meeting those organizational goals. So I think rooting it in why, you know, in the why of Children's Minnesota and demonstrating that we are serious about it, I think are the two approaches that we've taken.
Well, that's great to hear. And, you know, now zeroing in a little bit more, could you tell me a little bit about a project or initiative that you're most proud of from the last year?
Yeah, maybe I'll have a couple, and I'll tie it back to what I previously talked about. So again, DEI has been a priority for our organization. I already told you that it makes up one third of our strategic scorecard and one third of our incentive plan. And we've made a lot of progress on that. So on having, and we know, I mean, there's the thing is, there's research evidence that shows that if you have a more diverse healthcare workforce that better reflects the community that you're serving, you will do a better job of serving that community. You will have better outcomes. You will have fewer disparities. And so, you know, we're not just doing this because, you know, it's the woke thing to do. We're doing it because the evidence says that this is the way we're going to get better outcomes. And so we've made significant efforts and we've made significant strides. So in 2019, 19% of our workforce identified as people of color. We had a goal of increasing that to 34% by the end of next year. We're now at 30%. So just in that short period of time, we've made a tremendous, and we've done it through more expansive recruitment and better job of retention. And I'm very proud of that progress. And that's true at all levels. So we went from 0% of our executive team to one third of our executive team identifying as people of color. 30% of the next level of leaders, and again, 30% of the entire organization. So I'm very proud of that, very proud of the progress we've made on decreasing disparities. We have identified three clinical outcomes that where we have gaps based on race, and we've combined those into what we call our Health Equity Index. And each year we have a goal of decreasing the disparities in those outcomes being immunizations being up to date, asthma being under good control, and a patient experience measure. And through a variety of efforts, we have managed to narrow those gaps. Honestly, we still have a lot of work to do. We all do in this industry, but I'm proud of the fact that we're focusing on it and that we've started to move the needle on that. And, you know, these become mutually reinforcing. It's kind of interesting. people, I talk about this with colleagues, and they say, well, how did you make such huge strides in diversity of your workforce, and how are you recruiting people? And I say, not uncommonly at new employee orientation, people say to me, I came here to work at Children's Minnesota because of the stand you are taking on health equity, because of the way you are showing up in the community to advocate and to be sincere about this, and that's what attracted me here. So these become mutually reinforcing things. And then we have not really done much with AI, but we have done some, I think, interesting things with technology in the last year that are really helping us to deliver better outcomes for patients. And I'm going to highlight two of them. One, actually, one of our physicians talked about on your podcast not too long ago, Dr. Mark Bergeron, who's the medical director of our neonatal telehealth program. And we've instituted what we call our Kid Experts at Home program that has allowed us to discharge patients from our neonatal ICU earlier with as good or better outcomes, so decreasing length of stay, getting them home sooner, and still on track to have as good or better outcomes despite that through the use of remote monitoring and telehealth. And that's been really exciting. And that opens us up to then having really good conversations with payers because we have a mutual interest in keeping kids out of the hospital when they don't need to be. And so that's been exciting. And then we opened a new intraoperative MRI suite last year. And while intraoperative MRI is not necessarily itself a new technology, we've actually had it for some time. Our kid experts had constraints that they were discovering with the way it was being used, and they came up with a really innovative solution to how we configure this. And we worked with a company to help us build this. It's the first one in North America with this configuration that allows us across a three-room suite to have an MRI that is mounted on a rail system so it can move from room to room. Depending on the clinical circumstance, we can either move the patient into the scanner or the scanner to the patient without having to leave the operating room, without having to break anesthesia or sterile conditions, and enables them to do imaging from brain all the way through spine in a way that's more effective and more efficient. And it's very exciting to see the growth in that program.
That's amazing. Wow. I can imagine, it's just such a big game changer, I guess, to be able to do that with the MRI machine. And certainly everything else you mentioned, it's inspiring to know that people are paying attention to the work you're doing in the community with health equity and how, you're really framing your stance on some of these issues and that is attractive to folks. That was going to be one of my questions is, what do you feel like you really are unique in terms of being able to make such significant progress, towards your goal of a more diverse workforce and especially on the leadership side of things. I think, there's a lot of organizations that would like to be in a similar position. And so it's great to hear that that's been a really crucial part of how you've been able to grow and develop over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, before we wrap up here, I'm wondering, considering we've talked a lot about DEI as well as AI and some other areas, how are you thinking about growth and development for the future? What do you see as being ahead for the next 2, 3, or 5 years?
Yeah, when we think about growth, we often just think about it in terms of size, right? More revenue, more patients, et cetera. And that is certainly a dimension of growth we are thinking about. How can we serve more patients? How are we thinking about, what services we offer and where we offer them? And we've certainly got plans for growth in that way. I also think about growth in terms of depth, greater depth. And I've always believed that one of the things that distinguishes a children's hospital is that as the kid experts, we recognize that kids are not just small adults. They have unique needs, physical, emotional, social needs. And we have the infrastructure and the services to meet those needs. And so that really is about the experience of being in a children's hospital. And I think what we have in line for the next 10 years is to really double down on that and really make the Children's Minnesota experience one that is highly differentiated. A really comprehensively outstanding experience, in all encounters, whether they're clinic visits or appointment making or referrals for our patients and families and for our staff and for the rest of our community. And so that's something that we will be working on the next 10 years is growing our experience as one of the ways that we will also then grow to be able to serve more patients and more of our community.
I love that. Dr. Gorelick, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been such a fun and interesting conversation, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Thank you, Laura. It's been a pleasure.